the Special Committee on Budget. Wait a second. The Subcommittee on Education of the Special Committee on Budget for the Senate. And I will open a work session on SB 5543. Ms. McGlashan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. You should have received last Friday the LFO memorandum as well as the accompanying Orbit spreadsheet showing you the detailed adjustments to implement the Senate plan and also the agency's proposed performance measures. So I think what I will do is just go ahead and direct you to the Orbit's spreadsheet, and we can talk about the detailed adjustments. I do want to point out that it starts, the numbering of the Orbit spreadsheet starts with page 3 of 16, and you'll notice that there are some pages further on that appear to be missing. Those pages have to do with the state school fund, and since we're not considering the state school fund in this appropriations bill, even though technically the state school fund is part of the Department of Education's budget, those pages of the Orbit's report were not included, and nor was the summary sheet because it incorporates the state school fund amount. But if you're interested in looking at department-wide totals, excluding the state school fund, then I would just direct your attention to the table on page 1 of the memo. Okay. So if you will turn your attention then to the Orbit spreadsheet, there, just for some background, there are several budget units in the Department of Education's budget, department operations, the special schools, the Oregon School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf, the Youth Corrections Educational Program, grant and aid programs, and then debt service, and those are the budget units we'll be talking about today. So the first one is department operations, and I'll start with package 090. This is called the Analyst Adjustments Package. It's a package in the governor's budget that reduces the budget for estimated smart buy savings and also reduces the budget to meet targets for the governor's budget to balance general fund, eliminates six positions, an equivalent of 6.0 FTE, and then also adjust federal funds limitation for revenues that were expected at the time of development of the governor's recommended budget. And the LFO recommendation is that you approve this package as modified for the change in the PERS rate from 15.52% to 14.63%. So you can see that makes some slight adjustments to that package, which then is a total package of $1.1 million reduction in the agency's budget, and that comprises $2.7 million reduction in general fund, a $48,491 reduction in other funds, and then an increase of $1.6 million in federal funds expenditure limitation. And then the next package for operations is package 095, and that's the Scenic Participating Agency budget. And this package simply establishes a placeholder for this project, and it moves $1 of general fund from personal services to services and supplies. And it's simply in recognition that the Department of Education is one of the 12 participating agencies in the Scenic project, and their respective budget adjustments in terms of funding and positions in FTE will be addressed in a separate bill this session. So this is just, a placeholder budget, and you can see it has no budgetary impact at this time in Senate Bill 5543.
Mr. Chair, yes. I'm going back one step to the 0906. Person reduction FTE, does that reflect the 6.0 from the governor's recommended budget, or is that a 6 FTE reduction from the last biennium?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt. That is a reduction from last biennium to get to the governor's recommended budget.
Thank you.
And then if you'll flip to the next page 4 of 16, at the top is package 102, And this is the pre-K to 12 integrated data systems package, or also known as the KIDS project. And this is a package which would provide for integration of various data among ODE and community colleges in the higher ed system, as well as between school districts and ESDs and ODE. And it would add a part-time position of 0.5 FTE. And the recommendation is that you remove this package from the agency's budget and establish a special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund pending more information from the department on a budget and also on the proposed project. And at the time they appear before the emergency board, they can also ask for position authority. And I believe with the funding in the community colleges budget, this was also removed from that budget, and a special purpose appropriation established in the emergency fund for the same reason. So there could be more time to develop information on the project.
My understanding is that this is a relatively normal thing to occur when there just is some need to provide a little bit greater clarity. It is not meant in any way to say that that this program would not be funded. It's simply that just bring it back to the e-board before final funding is approved for it.
Sure. Yes. Okay, so the question I have on that also, does this reflect a $1.8 million reduction in the Department of Education budget, or does this, in fact, or is this $1.8 million reallocated within their budget, and this would actually, if it were adopted by the e-board, would be an additional $1.8 million?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, the adopted budget for the Department of Education would actually show a reduction or incorporate the reduction of $1.8 million. And then the emergency fund would have that funding within its budget. If the department appears before the emergency board and the emergency board does allocate the special purpose appropriation, then that would that funding would become part of what we call the legislatively approved budget, which is the budget after certain actions like by the emergency board. So it would, if they get the funding, it will eventually come back into the department's budget and be reflected there.
But just so that there's no misunderstanding here, because this number has such a similarity in terms of what the general number is, in terms of this is not the cuts that are identified in both the Senate and House version. And there is about a $1.8 million administrative cut, and that's not this, in the Senate version, and about a $3 million in the House version. So, but it's not this item, even though the number is obviously similar. Okay. The intent here is that we'll go through all these packages for each division, and then we will just take one motion on all of the packages, and then we will go on to other areas of the budget. I do not anticipate that these will be in any disposal. So.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, the next package is package 108, and this is called Agency Reorganization, and it simply realigns funding to complete the agency's recent reorganization, and it's essentially a cost-neutral package. You can see there's a small impact to the general fund, $61, a reduction of $88, other funds expenditure limitation, and an increase in federal funds expenditure limitation of $27. While it's not apparent from this spreadsheet, there has been an adjustment to recognize the PERS rate decrease, and so LFO recommends that you approve this package as modified. And you might recall during the agency's public hearings that when the new superintendent took office, there was a reorganization that was undertaken, and this simply puts the finishing touches on that. The next package is Package 801, LFO Analyst Adjustments, and this simply adjusts the budget for the PERS rate reduction and for the Attorney General hourly rate reduction, aligns other funds and federal funds limitation with expected revenues for 0507, and also restores some FTE, 1.5 FTE in one position that shouldn't have been taken out of the governor's budget, and so this would restore those positions in that one position and related FTE, and then the LFO recommendation is to approve that package.
Jerry?
Yes.
Just a quick comment on the Attorney General hourly rate reduction. That is not an actual reduction from what's happening now.
Right.
It's a reduction from the governor's budget. So it's not really, it's actually an increase in.
From where they are now.
From where they are right. now, yeah. So it's one that we characterize as a reduction. It's only a reduction from the governor's proposed budget.
That's correct. Mr. Chair, all of these adjustments would be from the governor's proposed budget.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just for my information, what is the current AG?
$98.
Package 811 is called Special Budget Committee Adjustments Number 1, and this is to implement the Senate budget plan, which has in it an unspecified reduction of $1.8 million general fund to the agency's operations budget. And LFO recommends approval of the package. So just to wrap up that budget unit, the budget would provide a $32.3 million general fund budget, which is about 8.5% below the 0305 legislatively approved budget. It would provide a $9.5 million other funds expenditure limitation, $42 million federal funds expenditure limitation, some non-limited other funds for a total funds budget for operations of $88.7 million, and that's about a 3.7% increase over the 0305 legislatively approved budget. Positions are reduced by about 1.9%. Positions would number 258 and the related FTE 255.2, and that's about a 1.2% reduction from the 0305 level. So if there are no questions on operations, if you'll turn your attention then to page 6 of 16, and this is for the special schools budget. And the first package is package 090. Again, this is called Analyst Adjustments, and this simply reduces the budget for the estimated SMART by savings, and you can see the reductions there in the spreadsheet, $108 reduction in general fund, $6,506. Dollars in other funds expenditure limitation, and then a $23 reduction in federal funds expenditure limitation for a total reduction of $6,637. And LFO recommends that you approve that package. 801 is the LFO analyst adjustments. These are the standard adjustments for PERS and the AG rate, and also aligning federal funds limitation with expected revenues. This would reduce the general fund budget by $88,926, decrease other funds expenditure limitation by $9,817, decrease federal funds expenditure limitation by $353,037, for a total reduction of $451,780.
Mr. Chair, in response to Senator Witsit's question, he asked you what the current Attorney General rate was, and you said it was 98, but in this package and in the previous one, it's reducing it from 119 to 111. Is it my understanding then that the governor increased it from 98 to 119 and we're lowering it to 111?
Yes, the governor recommended that it be increased to 119.
Okay.
But I think Senator Gordley would probably be in agreement with me that when we set it back to 111, the problem that we have is their costs in terms of, particularly in terms of benefit packages, are increasing by like everyone else's costs. So the 111 doesn't necessarily buy you more new assistant attorney generals.
Mm-hmm.
It probably keeps most, but not all, of the assistant attorney generals that we have right now.
The 111, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Senator Walker, reflects a result in the Ways and Means Public Safety process when we were a joint committee.
So that's been completely vetted then.
But also reflects the Senate version of the Attorney General, right?
Okay.
That 111.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, then just to wrap up special schools, you can see that this would provide a almost $17 million general fund budget for the schools, about a 2.4% increase over 0305, a $3.3 million other funds expenditure limitation amount, and $368,113 in federal funds expenditure limitation for a total budget of $20.7 million, and this is about a 1% increase over 0305, and you can see there's a slight reduction in positions and in FTE in this budget. Then if you turn your attention to page 8.
Yeah. I might discuss that for special schools budget just a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm at something of a loss to understand these particular expenditures. There's and with including federal funds about $21 million in per biennium here, and we have about 173, something like that. Within the schools of deaf, about half of those don't even live on campus. So the schools of deaf were expenditures per student are about $50,000 a year. And those at the School of the Blind are about $91,000 per year. I understand that those few unfortunate children who are still at the School of the Blind often have multiple handicaps and so forth. But I just have to wonder if there isn't a less expensive way than to have 157 full-time equivalent employees servicing the education of 179 students.
Senator Witz, I believe that part of the answer would be that, A, that the students are probably characterized in many cases as having very specific, in some cases extensive, special needs. And secondarily, even though it may not address this question, there is a budget note that's being that is part of this package that actually asks the Department of Education to look at contracting, well, one, potentially merging the two schools, and secondarily, contracting out the operation of the schools to another educational institution, such as an ESD or a school district.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that would perhaps be helpful. I just wanted to bring it to the committee's attention that, actually, you can attend Stanford for that. Like I said, I do understand that many of those students who are at the School of the Blind do have multiple disabilities. That's not my understanding for the School of the Deaf, and that there's only about half of the students who attend the School of the Deaf who are actually resident students. The rest of them commute. It's pretty unclear why that should cost $50,000 per year per student.
Would you like the department to respond, or, I mean, I can...
It'd be interesting.
Yeah. Ms. Fleming, did you want to respond?
Good afternoon, Chair Devlin, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent, Department of Education. To Senator Witsit's question, I think that is the reason why we would be happy to cooperate with the budget note directing us to look at the costs. A lot of those costs are reflected in terms of the residential environment, and even though not all of the students stay there overnight, the cost of 24/7, if you will, security and extra support for those special needs populations is very expensive. I happen to know just a little bit about that from having managed the schools at Hillcrest and McLaren for a period of time, and I believe the cost of an educating and housing an incarcerated youth is somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 a year, so it is expensive. And I think I want to be clear that our interest in looking at is not merging necessarily the populations of the two schools, but rather to look at the facilities that are available on those campuses. And in particular, the Department of Education really believes at this point that it should not be in the business of running schools. And I recognize that these two schools are very specialized environments. But I know that from having worked with Willamette ESD on the contracting out of the youth corrections programs, that the quality of those educational environments now compared to what they were when the State Department was running them has significantly improved, because they're in the business of providing direct services to children as a matter of course, and they're more connected to the community than we are able to be as a state agency. So I think there are a variety of reasons why that directive under that budget now makes sense for us to take a hard look.
Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, then, if you'll turn your attention to page 8 of 16, this is the Youth Corrections Educational Program. And there are two packages in this budget. This program receives funding from the State School Fund to make sure that youth in close custody facilities and then county detention programs receive educational services, and the department contracts out for those services. So the budget in the governor's, the amount in the governor's budget is based on the governor's original proposed $5 billion budget for the State School Fund. So the limitation in the governor's budget was calculated based on that. And package 090 reduces the budget for SMART by savings just a very small amount, $77 other funds, and then it adjusts the budget to reflect the governor's funding level for the State School Fund. And what LFO recommends that you do is approve this package with the understanding that the agency will likely come back to the emergency board once the final State School Fund number is agreed upon by the legislature. And at that time, the agency can also provide updated caseload data for the program when it reports to the emergency board. And then package 801 is LFO analyst adjustments, and this package reduces the budget for the PERS rate reduction and the AG rate reduction, and aligns federal funds expenditure limitation with expected revenues. And this would reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $18,334 and federal funds limitation by $400,274, for a total reduction of $418,608. And LFO recommends that you approve that package. So the total budget for this unit would be $24.4 million other funds expenditure limitation and $2.5 million federal funds expenditure limitation for a total funds budget of $26.8 million, 29 positions and 29 FTEs. And you can see the percentage increases in other, well, the percentage increase in other funds from 0305 is about 12%. There's a reduction in federal funds of about 11.9%, and the total budget is an increase of about 9.3% over 0305. And both the positions and the FTE experience some reduction from the 0305 levels. The next budget unit, which starts on page 10 of 16, is the grant and aid budget unit.
Ms. McGlashan, yes. On this particular area, when you go through it, could you highlight for the committee the differences between the Senate version versus the House version of the budget?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, I'll do that. The package 090 analyst adjustments package reduces various grant and aid programs to maintenance of effort levels, and in the governor's budget it does that. Eliminates funding for the Frontier Learning Network and the Student Leadership Centers, adds $100,000for the SMART program and then reduces funding for the Oregon Pre-K program by $11 million. And as you probably recall from the public hearings on the department's budget, this would reduce the number of eligible children served in that program from roughly 60% currently to 53% in 05-07. And these are all reductions taken to meet the governor's targets to balance the general fund budget.
And you're restoring $11 million to the pre-K.
That's correct, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. To implement the Senate plan, the LFO recommendation would be to restore 100% of this state funding for the well, first for the Student Leadership Center, so $736,688 general fund, and then restore $11 million to the Oregon pre-K program. It would not restore funding for the Frontier Learning Network. And, Mr. Chair, you'd ask for differences between this and the House plan. The House plan would restore $6 million to the Oregon pre-K program and would restore both the student leadership funding and the Frontier Learning Network funding. And the Frontier Learning Network funding is just slightly under $700,000. So the adjusted package to implement the Senate budget plan would be, instead of a $14.5 million general fund reduction as is in the governor's budget, it would be a $2.8 million general fund reduction, just a slight increase in other funds. And then the governor's budget also increased federal funds expenditure limitation and also non-limited federal funds based on estimates at the time the governor's budget was being developed of funding that was going to be coming from the U.S. Department of Education. So that total package in the governor's budget was an increase of $132.3 million. In the Senate plan, it would be $144.1 million. But we'll talk about another package in a minute that then reduces that federal funds expenditure limitation based on updated estimates from the U.S. Department of Education.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is that through the SMART program? I see that's in the first part. The LFO recommendation, is that added back in the SMART program?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, the governor's budget, in the 03 session, $100,000 was added to the department's budget in grant and aid for distribution to the SMART program, and that was considered a one-time one-time expenditure for the purchase of books. And so it was phased out in the first part of developing the governor's budget, and then in the later part of the budget, it was added back in at the governor's request, I believe, for $100,000 again for the 05-07 biennium. So the Senate budget plan would simply keep that in the budget.
Did you have a follow-up?
No.
Would it be fair then to summarize this to say that the Senate version restores $11 million to pre-K. The House version restores $6 million. Mm-hmm. Both restore leadership funds. Mm-hmm. The House version restores funding for the Frontier Learning Network, mm-hmm. but the Senate version does not. Mm-hmm. And both now fund the SMART program at $100,000.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And then the other piece that's different in the two budgets is that the unspecified reduction in the department's operations in the House plan is $3 million. In the Senate plan, it's $1.8
million.
Mr. Chair? Yes.
I'm very gratified that $100,000 went back into the SMART program. And that money is leveraged at 40-1 and largely by the Retired Educators Association. Was presented by the legislators or by the educators was a part of that. I mean, this is by virtue of that SMART program, they're able to leverage funds to the point that this one group has produced over $1.5 million time at, like, that's at $17 an hour. You know, I mean, it's probably closer to $3 million worth of stuff. So I think that's very, very important. Also, the other thing that I would mention is that the Senate version of the budget that eliminates funding to the Frontier Network just is not acceptable to those of us in the rural part of the state. That is an extremely important program that allows access to education from in small schools where you can't afford to have those teachers, but you can use it electronically. And to just summarily eliminate that is a tremendous blow to education in rural Oregon.
I understand that. For the sake of deliberations here today, which I think should be very serious, but at the same time, I believe right now that no one anticipates that the Senate version of this bill that comes out of this committee today, nor the House version of this bill that came out of committee this morning, I believe it was this morning, will be the final bill for the Department of, well, will be the final word on what the budget is for the Department of Education in these programs. There are still a number of issues to be resolved, and Frontier Learning Network is one of them. And the amount for pre-K is another.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to offer again for the record, since we're talking about the Frontier Learning Network, and I appreciate Senator Whitsitt bringing his concern forward. The program exists as a result of an urban-rural partnership. It's one of the few of examples we have of a real live urban-rural partnership in this process, and most certainly in my experience as a legislator, that is about delivering services, delivering education to Oregon students. So I'm expressing some grief about that omission from the budget as well, and we'll just wait to see what happens.
Well, to be fair, Senator Whitsitt and Senator Gordley, I have talked to the chair of the Senate committee and told him that until we can address a couple of these issues, I don't expect this budget to be passing the Senate floor anytime soon. So,
Mr. Chair, yeah, we're going to pass it out today, but only to the special committee on budget, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. My recollection from Phase 1, Phase 2, heck, I don't know, but we've been here so long, I can't remember. But we had a lengthy discussion about the Frontier Learning Network, and the department was doing something a little bit different. And I remember when we ranked everything and everybody talked about that, so I don't think the issue's quite dead, and there's maybe a better way of funding it.
We'll be discussing those issues, I think, over the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
Well, I think what we need to be clear about is, Mr. Chair, the department's efforts to implement what is being called the virtual learning network. Is that an accurate? Give me the proper terminology.
Careful not to discuss in too much detail a bill that we do not have a hearing up for.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, our notion would be to create a virtual portal that would allow connecting all of the online in schools that are existing in Oregon under one portal so that any public student could access any opportunity that's funded with a public dollar through that portal.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Fleming, could you identify yourself for the record?
Keith Fleming, Deputy Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education.
So in my mind, Mr. Chair, a part of our understanding needs to be at what point do we actually hand off a Frontier Learning Network because it's becoming something else that's broader and that serves more more students. If we're coming to that understanding as we get ready to leave here,
I believe, Senator Gordley, that there are a number of items relative to that are going to be discussed. I think something still has to be addressed relative to the Frontier Learning Network itself, and that'll be probably a subject for a future meeting. I don't know at this point. I mean, we are going through what we've been directed to go through, but at this point, I'm not entirely sure that this bill, once we forward it out, will actually be voted on at the full committee. Or if we will just do Basically, there are a lot of items in these bills. Basically, what we will do is send it out with the recommendation to the full committee. But when we come back to the bill, we will be dealing with only several issues within the bill. And that will be largely to resolve constitutional problems with the bill. And I'm not talking about constitutional problems with the Oregon or U.S. Constitution. They might be contained in the Oregon Constitution, but it's a different kind of an issue. Ms. McGlashan.
Then, Mr. Chair and members, if you'll direct your attention on page 10 of 16 to package 801 towards the bottom of the spreadsheet, that's the LFO analyst adjustments. This is a package that simply adjusts the agency's federal funds expenditure limitation and the non-limited federal funds amount to projected revenues, and LFO recommends that you approve the package. And that would decrease the federal funds expenditure limitation by about $66.4 million, non-limited by 15.3 for total funds reduction of $81.8 million. And again, these are based on the most recent estimates from the U.S. Department of Education, so they could change. And while it is a substantial decrease from what was in the governor's budget, or the adjustment that was in the governor's budget, you'll see on the next page that it's the final number for federal funds is still a 6.8% increase over the 0305 level. Then at the top of the...
Yes.
Mr. Kenneth, we have received some communication, I think all of us did, regarding the federal grant and aid funds that had not been utilized yet. And in conversation with some of the folks from the Department of Education, was assured that for this time of year that is somewhat normal, and that until September some of that funding won't be allocated. But how does that comport with the figures on the previous page here? LFO analyst adjustment for the package descriptions on federal funds.
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, I think there are two separate issues. This is the package 801 is simply an adjustment in recognition of the most recent estimates from the U.S. Department of Education. And the federal budget is on a different fiscal year, as you probably know, than the state's fiscal year. They're from October 1st to September 30th, and we're on a July 1st to a June 30th budget. So there are some timing issues, but and the agency often does have carryover funds from one biennium to a next, but then it spends those carryover funds in the next biennium. At the same time, additional carryover funds are created in the next biennium to carry over to the following biennium. So it's kind of a wash, if you will. So and then there's also an issue with some of these grant funds when the school districts submit required reports so that the department can release funds. So I don't know if that information answers any of your questions, but if not, I'll try again.
I think you answered the first paragraph that you did. They're separate.
Okay. All right. Package 811, then, on the top of page 11 of 16, that's special budget committee adjustments 1. And this would simply take the funding for the anticipated caseload growth in the early intervention, early childhood special education program out of the department's budget and place it in the emergency fund as a special purpose appropriation pending updated information from the agency on caseload growth and the availability of increased federal funds for the program. So this would reduce the agency's budget by $4.9 million general fund. And LFO recommends that you approve this package, and there is a budget note related to this adjustment. And this is something putting the caseload growth dollars in the emergency fund is something that's been done for at least two sessions. This would be the third or maybe fourth. I'm not recalling clearly, but it is something that we've done in recognition of the difficulty in projecting the caseload growth in the program. and also the availability of federal funds. So that would give you, again, just to summarize the budget unit, that would give you $191.1 million general fund in this budget, and that's a 0.5% increase over the 0305 level. Doesn't include the special purpose appropriation for EIECSC. It would be a 14.7 million other funds expenditure limitation level, which is a 2.5% increase over the 0305 level. Again, federal funds are about a 6.8% increase at $688.5 million. And then non-limited federal funds, which are for the nutrition programs from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, would be $227.9 million, about a 21.6% increase over the 0305 level. And then the total funds budget would be $1,122 million, roughly, and that's an 8.2% increase over the 0305 legislatively approved level. And then the final budget unit is for debt service on lottery bonds, and I believe a question came up during the joint ways and means process about the lottery bonds, the amount of the issuances, and when the bonds would be paid off, and you should have received at your offices information from the department. But just to recap for you, there were two issuances for a total of $277 million, and the first issuance was in the, I think, the spring of 99, and then the second issuance in 99-01. And school districts could use these issuances for, or the bond proceeds for the acquisition, construction, remodeling, repair of facilities, but they could also use the proceeds for certain operational expenses like textbooks and computers and even instructional training. And the bond should be paid off around 2016. And so the budget for the department includes the debt service on those bonds, and the governor's budget provides $56.9 million in lottery funds, obviously the bulk of the debt service, and then a small amount of other funds expenditure limitation, which is basically interest earnings on debt service-related accounts like reserve funds, and that's $1.7 million other funds expenditure limitation for a total of $58.7 million total funds for debt service.
At this point, we will go to recommended bill amendments, and Ms. McLaughlin will go through those briefly, and then we'll take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation and to move to amend Senate Bill 5543, as indicated on page 3 of your memo. And then we will do, after that, we will do separate motions on the performance measures and budget notes, probably one motion for both. And then we'll do a final motion. And again, I'm not expecting that these motions are going to be unanimous. So. In terms of the recommended bill amendments, how comfortable does the committee feel in Ms. McGlashan? Sometimes in committees we read these in entirety. How comfortable is the committee with just referencing what's been presented here?
Well,
in the memorandum.
Mr. Chair, I would be comfortable with them being read into the record, given that there's an audience beyond the people sitting in this room.
Right, that's true.
Listening that's on the net. And
so, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, in Section 3, or Item 3 of your memo, which is on page 3, you'll see recommended bill amendments. And what the amendment would be is to you would delete the contents of the original bill, Senate Bill 5543, because that's a blank appropriations bill, and then add language to appropriate general fund, establish lottery funds expenditure limitation, establish other funds expenditure limitation, and establish federal funds expenditure limitation as follows. General fund appropriation for department operations, $32,326,129. For special schools, $16,000. $997,830. For grant and aid, what we do is we appropriate line item amounts for the specific, for the individual grant and aid programs that receive general fund. And those would be early intervention services and early childhood special education programs, also known as EIECFE, $84,732,417. And this does not include the special purpose appropriation, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. General fund appropriation for regional programs, $30,832,573. Educating children with disabilities in hospital programs, $1,527,083. Educating children with disabilities in long-term care or treatment programs, $17,665,484. The Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program, $54,868,304. Student Leadership Centers, $736,688. Connectivity Grants, $600,000. The SMART Program, $100,000. And the Summer Food Service Programs, $50,176. Lottery Funds Expenditure Limitation to be established for debt service, $56,929,095. Other funds expenditure limitations to be established for the following: operations, $9,451,398. Special schools, $3,316,266. Youth corrections educational program, $24,361,796. Grant and aid, $14,744,661. Debt service, $1,731,375. And then federal funds expenditure limitations to be established as follows: operations, $42,038,013. Special schools, $368,413. Youth corrections educational program, $2,462,907. And then for grant and aid, establish the following individual expenditure limitations, federal funds expenditure limitations by source: individuals with disabilities education act, $248,212,674. Title I-A grants to local educational agencies, $247,142,256. Title I-C migrant education, $25,564,947. Title II-A teacher quality, $55,585,911. Vocational education, $15,743,566. And all other federal programs, $96,197,930. And then the bill would also have a section which would establish two special purpose appropriations in the emergency fund: $4,893,114 general fund for the early intervention, early childhood special education program, and $1,800,000 general fund for the pre-K to 12 integrated data systems or KIDS project. And then the bill would also include appropriate language in the bill for non-limited expenditures, and the largest source of that is the federal funds received from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And you are also including those other items, the to establish two special purpose appropriations.
Yes. I believe I did read those, Mr. Chair. And
I'm trying to figure out what the motion is. Do I have a motion to accept the LFO recommendations and to amend Senate Bill 5543 by deleting the contents of the original bill, which is a blank appropriations bill, and adding the language to do the items that have been indicated by Ms. McGlashan?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved. It's been moved to accept the LFO recommendations and to amend Senate Bill 5543 by deleting the contents of the original bill and adding the language that's been indicated by Ms. McGlashan. Because I know that this vote will not be unanimous, I'm going to ask that the roll be called. And I know people are voting their conscience on the bill, so a no vote is not really... this is not our first, this is not our last.
Mr. Chair, did you ask for discussion yet?
Oh, I will. I will. Okay. Is there any discussion?
Well, only that I know this is not our last vote. Mr. Chair, I want to move this bill. Things going so we can close down the session and get these school districts the money that they're looking for.
And Ms. Walker, or Senator Walker, I'm sorry for that last reference, but I believe we'll move with all due haste and hope we'll be out of here by Labor Day. any additional discussion? Will the committee assistant please call the roll?
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsett?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. We'll now go to performance measures and budget notes.
On page four, members, in the middle of the page, is item three, and it just dawned on me that that's the second item three in the memo. It should really be item four. I apologize for that. And budget note should be item five, and your final motion should be item six. As you probably recall from the Joint Ways and Means public hearings, that the department was planning on doing some work on its performance measures even this session, and they were going to come back and discuss those, and I think the opportunity for that is kind of passed with the split committee process. And so I did distribute to your offices their proposed performance measures, and I do hope you all brought them with you, because I do have one extra copy if you don't have it.
That would probably be what I would need of some questions. Everything but that. Oh, actually, I do have that.
Okay.
I just didn't know what it looked like.
So there are two approaches you could take today, Mr. Chair, depending on how long you want to be here. The first one is you could have the agency come up and discuss what they've done to date on the performance measures and go over the document with you, and then provide any direction to the agency to modify their proposed performance measures or delete any of them or even add new ones. You would also want to adopt targets for 2006 and 2007 for each of the measures. If you had a chance to look at the report, you'll notice that the targets aren't in there, and those targets do need to be part of any legislatively adopted report. And in lieu of that, given the time that it would take to do that, you may want to simply direct the agency to work with the Department of Administrative Services, and that may include the Oregon Progress Board, and the Legislative Fiscal Office to establish those targets, and then have the agency present its final version to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the final version of their performance measures with the targets, and for the committee's review and approval. And if you do that, I would suggest that you have them appear before that committee no later than March 1st of 2006. So if that committee wants to provide any feedback to the agency and have them do some revisions, there would be time to do that before the agency submits its annual performance progress report, which is in late 2006.
Members of the committee, as you may remember, in terms of performance measures, the department was directed, even I believe prior to the session, to revise completely its whole performance measures program and to finish that process sometime in March, I believe. Of course, then there were some more questions that were brought up by different people. And then we came up with these lists, pretty extensive list of performance measures. If you've read through them, they're very extensive. And in discussions with the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, I think that both of us feel that it's probably at this stage best to refer them on to the process that Ms. McGlashan has indicated, because it's going to take actually bringing together a lot of data to basically set anticipated objectives for each one of these performance measures. So that's, I think we'll go along with the recommendation that's in
item 4, if there would be no objections to that. You should have received a copy of the performance measures in the package. They are amongst the most extensive performance measures that I've seen for any agency that's been before a budget committee. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I basically have a problem with the way that these performance measures are separated out as to we report on behalf of others or report on behalf of ourselves. In my way of thinking, as the Department of Education is an accounting firm, that makes sense. If they're a management firm, the buck should stop at their desk. But I don't really accept that the percent of students graduating is not a measure of the Department of Education and so on. I understand their methodology thinking that they're not in total control of that, but as the manager of education, if you look at the mission statement, to lead the kindergarten through grade 12 education enterprise to give all Oregon students a valuable first-rate education. They're the leaders of this effort. And yet it would appear from this performance measure separation that they deny the responsibility of the outcome. I don't accept that.
Senator Whitsett, I understand your concern, and I believe it's legitimate. And I think that I think there's probably differences of opinion on this committee on this issue. But I would like that concern noted in the budget report for this budget. Obviously, it raises very significant issues because I think one of the issues it raises, and it's a very difficult issue to deal with, is if the department, or the superintendent for that matter, is saying because they do not have direct control over these measures that they're reporting on them on the behalf of others. I can understand your concern, but I can also understand the immediate concern that's going to be raised if we try to give the department that authority to basically direct how school districts meet or don't meet those measures. Then we raise an entirely different concern about what the ability is to maintain local control over those school districts. An issue that Senator Whitsett, I believe both in you and I, regardless of how long we were in this building, are going to be probably debating as long as we are here. Mm-hmm. So, but I would like that concern noted in the budget report for this.
My concern is an extension of my concern of the denial of responsibility on the part of the Standard Practice Commission earlier in the
right
hearing. Someone needs to be responsible for the fact that our education system is not working well. And it would seem that that should be the leaders of the organization who are charged with managing that.
Is there a motion to accept the LFO recommendation basically to direct that the department work with the respective agencies and then report back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee?
Mr. Chair, I'm ready to make a motion, but I would like to suggest an amendment to that motion.
Okay.
Or just point out that the performance measures discussion is one that should carry forward through the interim House and Senate education committees, or if there's a joint education committee. So I see the reporting activity, the reporting on final measures and targets, as needing to be reported not only to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, but also to the Interim Education Committee or committees.
Well, that would be if there was this. There will undoubtedly be education committees in the interim, so it would be either to a separate House and Senate or if there's a joint, to a joint
yes
committee.
Yes. So. People with some understanding and expertise who have hopefully been following the issues, and so that we have continuity in the discussions.
Is there any discussion of that motion?
Well, I noticed that myself and wondered why the education committees were being left out. It was going straight to the audit committee and then the e-board.
I think Senator Walker, the reason it was left out is because it's become kind of the practice in some of these where we still have to resolve some issues, just to refer them to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Now, in many of those cases, there probably isn't really, it's not to the magnitude of this issue. I mean, if we direct the, I don't want to pick on anyone, but if we pick on the social workers to report back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on their performance measures, I don't know necessarily if you have to have Human Services Committees commenting on that. But I would think measures that are supposed to be judging our overall performance in public education in the state warrant consideration of both education committees and the audit committee.
Well, particularly if you want to address Senator Whitsitt's concern that
right.
you just expressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would support Senator Gordon's
yeah.
motion wholeheartedly. As do I get the sense that you do, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I do.
So we might come out of here with something on a unanimous vote today.
Even though I actually know that I probably will serve on the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, but I'm not so sure I'm going to have much fun. So, any additional discussion of this motion? Could we call the roll on the motion? This is just on the budget notes, just on the performance measures.
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Now we will go to the budget notes.
All right, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. Item 5 is renumbered on page 4, budget notes. Budget notes still need to get the approval of both the chair of the House Budget Committee and the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, and all four of these budget notes have been approved by the two chairs. The first budget note has to do with the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program, and I mentioned or referred to this budget note briefly earlier when we were talking about the Special Purpose Appropriation. And this budget note is similar to budget notes that have been adopted in the last two, if not three, legislative sessions. For the agency, and it directs them to report to the emergency board, in this case no later than April of 2006, on the status of the program, and they are to include in their report the number of eligible children served in the program, the actual caseload growth to date in the first year of the biennium, the projected caseload for the remainder of the biennium, and then the amount of any additional federal funding available for the program, and that would include from sources such as the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and from Medicaid. And at that time, the department may request all or part of the $4.9 million special purpose appropriation if needed for caseload increases. Do you want me to just continue describing the budget? Okay. The second budget note has to do with the special schools cost effectiveness review, and with this budget note, the Department of Education is directed to provide a report to the interim Senate and House Education Committees as well as to the Emergency Board during the 05-07 biennium on the cost effectiveness of transferring the program at the Oregon School for the Blind to the Oregon School for the Deaf campus, and the review shall include the cost effectiveness of contracting out the two programs to a local education agency. And there was some concern this morning in the House subcommittee that this would be a combining of the two populations, and that is not necessarily the intent of transferring the one program to the other program's campus. They would still be operated. The populations would be separate, but it's just a way to see if dollars can be saved by combining the two campuses. You might recall, although there wasn't a lot of discussion during the Ways and Means public hearings on the agency's budget about the special schools, there is quite a bit of deferred maintenance at the two campuses, and so this would allow the agency to look at the cost savings that might be achieved by combining the two campuses, and they would simply come and report And then it would be either up to the interim education committees to perhaps introduce any necessary legislation for the next legislative session, or even the next legislature introducing a bill to possibly combine the two programs. If the, you know, the decision is made that that's the policy direction that they want to go. So it would simply be a report in the interim.
Might I ask, Mr. Chair, it's Ms. Gleshin, the last part where it says the contracting out of the two programs to a local education agency, are we talking about an ESD?
An ESD or school.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Walker, it could be. It would be a matter of the agency no longer, you know, being in the business of actually running the two schools, but they would contract out those services similar to what they do with the Youth Corrections Educational Program, either an ESD or school district, whichever is most appropriate. And I, if you... I don't know if the agency wanted to add anything to that to address your question. They
please come up.
Chair Devlin, Vicki Fleming, Department of Education. Yes, I think I mentioned earlier, having been through that transition of moving the youth corrections programs at Hillcrest and McLaren from under the scope of the department to actually contracting through Willamette Education Service District, that the quality of those learning environments has been greatly enhanced. And this really speaks to the transition that we've been in the state agency, and maybe even to Senator Whitsett's point about who's responsible for what. The differentiated role from the state agency is that we should not be providing direct services to young people. In fact, don't have the expertise, or it really isn't a part of the core mission in the reorganized view of things for us to be doing that. And it makes much more sense for someone who has actually in the day-to-day business of running schools and managing direct services to be in that position. So we'd like to take a look at that. It may not necessarily be just about saving money. It may be, in fact, about improved outcomes for kids.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to see the ESD bill pass this session before I'd want to sign off on something like that. But I don't mind the part looking at it.
And Mr. Chair and members, the third budget note is a report on the Youth Corrections Educational Program funding options, and this budget note would direct the department to work with the Oregon Youth Authority regarding the educational needs of youth served through the Youth Corrections Educational Program, and that would include post-secondary needs as well. And the agency would report to the State Board of Education, the Emergency Board, and the Interim Senate and House Committee, Interim Senate and House Education Committees by April 2006. They would put together a representative stakeholder group interested in working in the area of youth corrections and then recommend funding options to address educational services for incarcerated youth who are between the ages of 19 to 25 and have already achieved a regular high school diploma. And finally, the last budget note, this is similar to a budget note that was in the department's budget report last session, and I believe the session before that. This would direct the department to review annually how English as a second language funds are being allocated and expended for English language learner programs and other special programs supporting English language learners as required by statute. And the department is directed to report the findings of its review on fund allocation by January 2007 to the State Board of Education and the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Pardon me. I absolutely support this budget note regarding use of English as a second language programs and their funding. But it also raises a concern about how we monitor expenditures of No Child Left Behind funds. And so I'm needing to hear again. I know I've heard this before, but if I could hear again on the record from the department how we currently monitor the allocation and expenditure of No Child Left Behind funds out in the districts.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gorley, we have a variety of different activities that we conduct that allows us to know whether or not the funds are being spent appropriately and, in fact, whether the programs are actually resulting in outcomes. We have, as you know, revised the mandate for the continuous improvement planning process that consolidates federal grant expectations with state mandates, and we have an annual submission of that we've been working on in a new context to hopefully save districts some paperwork and some headache that will eventually become electronic. Interactions, looking at the performance data, submission of timeliness in terms of reports, information that we have for the U.S. Department of Education providing guidance to districts about what is in accordance with the law and what is not. We just recently, I think perhaps we can at another time share with you an internal audit that we just did on the management of the migrant education program, which basically takes everything that we do and all the activities in terms of managing that and unpacks them at a very great level of specificity to show us where we were weak and where we were strong in terms of our management of the program. And what we found as a result of that was that, in fact, in terms of the monitoring, evaluation, and corrective action with districts, that we don't have enough attention to that set of activities in the way that we manage. And so we'll go back, and knowing that that's probably what results in things being different, both for kids and for the program managers, we need to beef up how we are doing that. And we're systematically, with our internal auditor, going through those programs as they come forward in need of attention.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chair, what would be helpful is to if is there a report that currently details a report that the department is responsible for gathering that details the allocations and the expenditures at the district level, the No Child Left Behind funds, so that you could tell me today how districts are doing in spending the dollars. Like, who has not spent the available dollars? Are there dollars that are going to go revert back to the feds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gorley, yes, and I think in answer to that question you've had about those ending fund balances and how come there's so much money sitting there that's unspent, we can give you an accounting of both the general fund that you invest in, the state school fund, and the federal funds that are distributed on the behalf of the districts. I'm sorry, I got off on a monitoring question. You were really asking about the money. Database initiative is a way of accommodating the question, the answer to the question about where does ESL money get spent in the district. And I believe Senator Whitsitt has questions about the special ed weight in the formula and actually how much of that money gets sent to the district and where it gets spent as well, that we'll be doing an analysis on.
It just occurs to me that, not just occurs to me, but one of the issues I hear a lot about are, well, is the state, how much money is the state receiving for No Child Left Behind? Or sometimes you hear it's an unfunded mandate. We didn't get any money for No Child Left Behind. But actually, there are millions of dollars here in the state to be spent for the purposes of implementing the No Child Left Behind mandate. So what we need to be able to do as policymakers is track how much money is being received, where is it being spent, on what districts, and with what results, and see that in a document. If a document like that doesn't exist today, then we need to be able to create such a document so that we all know what the No Child Left Behind piece looks like, what the funding piece looks like. Does that make sense from where you sit?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, it does make sense, and it's a fairly ambitious assignment. I think we have it in bits and pieces, and I think what I hear you saying is you want to know how federal funds get leveraged for the outcomes that we want for all kids, and you'd like to see that. I'm assuming you mean district by district and
district
a bit of a snapshot.
The federal government is sending back to us our tax dollars which are being invested in what we call No Child Left Behind, with the expectation that we're going to see some improvements in achievement. We're going to see some closing of that gap, which is an achievement and a teaching gap. So we need a mechanism or some tool that we legislators, policymakers, can look at that tells us how much money we receive as a state, which districts receive the money, which student populations are being targeted with those dollars, and then again, what are the results we're getting for the expenditures.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gourley, let me tell you about a couple of things that are in the works just briefly. One is that we've applied to the National Governors Association for a grant to participate in the American Diploma Project and be a part of a national initiative around redesigning high schools. And a requirement of that grant is to participate in the Standard & Poor's website, which is really theschoolmatters.com. is about constructing a user-friendly tool so you can go and get reports where you know what the return on investment is. What's the cost-benefit analysis from a banker's perspective? So if we are recipients of that grant, we will be required to participate and provide Oregon's data into that national website, School Matters. The second thing is that I think in our phase two hearings, we provided you, at least Dr. Salam Noor provided a profile that outlined educational outcomes and the amount of money, and we gave you a phantom district, and we showed you how that looks. And it sounds like that's somewhat close to what you're asking for. Our intent or our internal discussions, if we have the resources and the capacity to do that, would be to provide that profile as a supplement to the state report card in fall of 06 as information that the district and policymakers could use for that.
What we need is, what I'm asking for basically is the same thing that we're asking for in the budget note related to English as a second language. We have that budget note, the English as a second language budget note, because we know we've had this history of ESL funds not necessarily being spent on, the dollars not necessarily following those students. So the budget note is there to help us stay focused, stay on track, and make sure the dollars are getting where they're supposed to go. And I'm just looking for the same kind of focus on the No Child Left Behind dollars. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm probably talking about crafting a budget note that isn't in front of us right now.
Right. And I think we'd probably save that conversation for that time.
Okay.
Well, I have indicated that I'm willing to explore an additional budget note, knowing the limitations in terms of capabilities, but still needing some of the information to get started, because the budget note that we are currently have here is our fourth budget note, is the third biennium in which that budget note has been created, and the information has improved each biennium with that. We're expecting it to improve this biennium. I think what Senator Gourley is talking about is starting the process this biennium. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Gourley, we do have, and it's available on our website now, a district-by-district comparison of how much federal money they received and in what category. We know how many students, as a result, are served by that information. And we know the results that districts are achieving disaggregated by subgroup in the district. Looking at the rest of the funding formula as opposed to the federal fund, we have some very precise information already available on the federal funds. The funding formula, particularly around poverty and special education, would be the two areas in addition to the work that we have already done in ESL bilingual funding. Those are state general fund revenue, not federal funds. And so the work that we did there was more on the allocation of the state general fund.
We can look at this further. This will, again, not be our final vote on this budget. So. Mr. Burke, can you identify yourself for the record?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Chief Policy Officer at the Department.
Okay. with that, we have four budget notes. These budget notes have been approved by both the chair of the House Committee and the chair of the Senate Committee. Is there a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, will the committee assistant call the roll?
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator
Wilson? Aye.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. We are now on the final motion. Move Senate Bill 5543 as amended to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass as amended recommendation. Do I have such a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, will you please call the roll?
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitson?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Yes. Motion passes. Committee members, we will not be meeting tomorrow. We have not been approved to do anything tomorrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's just because you were so expeditious today, you actually have this budget in front of you for tomorrow for work session.
Please, Mr. Chair, don't
She's being optimistic. We do not actually have anything that we can actually move at this time. Next week, I am anticipating that if there is some movement, that we might have a budget for the Oregon University System. And that budget might be different from both the House and the current Senate version. Might be. So that will be our course of action next week. We may get one or two, I doubt it, we may get one or two policy bills next week. The reason I doubt that we will get them by that time, we might get one, is because we just had policy bills released by the President to the Senate, to the Chair of the Budget Committee, who has actually asked the Legislative Fiscal Office to forward some of those to subcommittees, including this subcommittee. But most of those still have to have fiscals done on them. And the question is how many can actually have fiscals done? And some of the ones before us are very major issues. One of them, obviously, is the ESDs. We may or may not get SB 838. SB 838 is the ONAMI and all of those programs, I think, that you're aware of. I do not know if we will get that or not. I'm expecting that we will. But right now, we do not know what the agenda is going to be next week, and I will let you know as soon as I know.
Senate Bill 300, expanded option.
Yes, it's on the short list, and the Senate Bill 300 is on that list. SB 16 is on that list.
749
is on that list. A lot of bills are on the list. When we will get to schedule them, I do not know at this particular juncture. Sooner or later, I'm hoping that we will be processing agency budgets on the same bill. So we just don't send Senate bills over to the House, and they just don't send House bills over here. But we will decide when we will deal with each other's bills, and we will actually start to make more progress than we are making now. So, with that, we will adjourn.